Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's official. Bill and Melinda Gates are no longer married. As of Monday, they became part of a growing group, divorced people over 50. In studies, it's called later life marital dissolution, but it's commonly referred to as gray divorce, and it has more than doubled since 1990. That doesn't mean thousands of Americans have put their love lives on ice. That said, if you've been widowed or split from a longtime partner or spouse or never thought about long-term coupling but would like to do so now, you might be looking for a little guidance. My next guest, Francine Russo, has written a book titled Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. You may have read her recent piece in the New York Times called Older Singles Have Found a New Way to Partner Up, Living Apart. And as the title suggests, older daters might want to think about things a little differently now. Francine Russo, welcome to All of It.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Usually I'm having lunch with you, Allison, but I'm eating and you're talking.
All right, good deal. I'm glad I get to talk to you during your lunch hour. Hey, everybody, if you are over 50 and you'd like some guidance from our guest, from Francine, give us a call, 646-435-7280. Or maybe you found love later in life. We'd love to hear your success stories. Call in and inspire some folks, 646-435-7280. If you want to remain anonymous, you can always send us a direct message on Instagram at All of It WNYC, or you can respond to our tweet that's up there on our Twitter page at All of It WNYC. All right, I want to talk about first steps from your book. The very first thing you ask people to consider is this question. Do you need to do some head work first? What do you mean by head work?
I mean, emotionally, psychologically, are you actually ready to date? Now, I started dating very soon after I was widowed, way before I was ready, in lots of ways. One, I was still grieving. But also, I was desperately needy, and many people told me, you know, desperation is not attractive. I was so needy, and I didn't feel good about myself, and I think a lot of people feel that way. And so the most important thing to do first is get yourself to feel okay. And I didn't get this. I mean, people would say, don't be so needy, and I thought, but I am needy. I do feel lonely, and it's okay to feel lonely. But I gradually learned how to be okay alone. I started biking along the Hudson River, and when I was on my bike, with the wind in my hair, I didn't need anybody. It felt terrific. And on Saturday nights when I didn't have a date, which was usually, I would go out, I would go to the movies by myself, and I would sit at a cafe outdoors, and I would talk to people. I would flirt with babies, I would pet dogs, I would chat with couples. And I can't tell you I wasn't ever lonely, but I was okay. So the first thing you have to do is figure out just how to be okay.
You have a list of questions on page 7 and 8, and you ask people to be as honest if they can, even if it hurts. Would you share a few of those questions with our listeners?
I'm sorry, what page did you say that was?
It's on page 7 and 8. It says, do you need to do some head work first?
Right.
You can ask yourself
Okay. Just
a few of those questions.
Yes.
I think they're interesting.
Well, it's really helpful to understand who you are now and what you need. So you need to ask yourself that, because what you need at 55 or 65 or 70 is very different from what you needed when you were in your 20s and 30s. You also need to ask yourself, am I really available to new people in my life, or do I put barriers in the way? Now, ask yourself, do I feel desperate for a partner? Because as I've just said, if you feel that way, that's not a good way to start. Do I feel strong enough to take risks? That is crucial, because everything about the dating process involves some risk, not necessarily a big risk, but you put yourself out there and somebody else may not respond positively. You may really like somebody and not be liked back or not be called back. You may feel vulnerable to somebody and discover that you're going to get hurt. You need to know you're strong enough to survive that. And you know what? If you're over 50, you've got to be strong enough mm-hmm. because you've been widowed or divorced. People you love have died. You're strong enough. Just remind yourself of everything you've survived and you're okay.
Love those. I do think it's interesting. You suggest that people think about their must-have lists a bit differently than when they were younger. It's a good exercise, you say, to justify your must-haves to yourself. How do I go about justifying a must-have? What's an example?
Well, for example, I'm thinking of a woman who really loved European travel. And so that was on her list. Because she spoke many languages, she had friends in Europe, but more important than that was she wanted to be treated as an equal partner by somebody. She wanted somebody she was intellectually and in other ways compatible with. And when she found the guy who was all those things, he hated to travel. And she said to herself, you know, this matters. It's a sacrifice, but it's so worth giving up that to have this incredible relationship. And I think that if you ask yourself, do I really need somebody who's culturally sophisticated or likes to backpack or reads the same books as I do, I think you will find that those are not essential for your happiness. What's essential is having somebody who adores you and really gets you and doesn't judge you and has your back when things get really hard. And if you don't get 10 of those things on your list of 20, that's okay. That's not settling if you get a great relationship.
My guest is Francine Russo. The name of her book is Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. Let's get to some Team All of It listeners. Kit is calling in from Bayville on line 4. Hi, Kit. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So as I told your screener, I had a surprise divorce when I was 40. My ex-husband came home one day and told me he didn't love me and he was leaving. And I met my now husband about a year after that. And he was 50 when I met him, and he too had gone through a surprise divorce. And, we just clicked right off the bat. And, he had grown children and I had little children, and he was willing to, you know, step up and become a father all over again. And we've been together now. I'm 50 now. He's almost 60. You know, we've been together for 10 years and married for almost 4. And so, you know, as your guest was saying, when my ex-husband left, I really never thought that I would be happy again. And it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. And for older people, I think it's important to know that you can find love after 50 or 40 or 60 or 70, whatever the case may be.
Kit, you both sound like good eggs, you and your husband. Thanks for calling. Francine, dive in.
I am so happy to hear that story, but it's not an uncommon story. So having to go through a divorce, it's kind of like a forced rebirth because you're suddenly able to find something so much better, so much more compatible with who you are now. And there are so many opportunities. The people who say, oh, there's nobody out there, if that's what you're saying, you're wrong. Because all those divorced people and all those widowed people, they're out there and they're looking for what you want to.
It's interesting, Francine. Obviously, there people are single for a number of reasons. Divorce, one of them, widowhood, somebody who's just chosen to stay single for a long time. I want to ask about divorce, though. If you're divorcing after 50, you've spent, you know, probably decades at least with the other person. What do you do with all those memories? What guidance can you give people so that those memories also don't get in the way of creating new memories?
Divorce and widowhood are really different cases. Mm-hmm. Because when you're divorced, usually there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of anger. So many people forget that there were many good things in their marriage, that there were a lot of things they loved about their partner. And that can be a mistake. They go out looking for somebody who's the opposite of my ex, and that never works. So what I say to those people is make a list of the things you loved about your partner and look for those things again, but also make a list of all the things that didn't work. For example, if you were not treated as an equal, if this person was not there for you, didn't want to listen to you, then what you want, you make a list, put that in the positive, and look for somebody who's warm and giving. Look for somebody who really wants to hear about your day and really engage with you. And when you read profiles, when you email, when you date, and especially when you start a relationship, look for both the good qualities and the bad qualities. And when you're widowed, you give yourself some time to grieve the loss of this person. And don't start dating as I did before you're ready. Or if you do, take a break and start again. And make the person you loved a part of you. Like there was one woman who watched her husband be incredibly gregarious and charm people. And she started going out and socializing, and she started using some of those same skills and realized she had incorporated part of her late husband into herself.
Francine, we've got a lot of questions for you, people looking for some advice, so let's get to them. Sally is calling in. Hi, Sally. Thanks for calling All of It. What's your question for Francine Russo?
Thank you. First of all, Ms. Russo, I bought your book immediately after the article in the Times. I've read most of it. It is so helpful, and it has way more depth than most books. I've read quite a few on the subject, so I have to thank you for your book. Yeah, it's so well written and deep and thoughtful. I have a specific question about the issue of shaving a few years off your age. You mentioned that very briefly in your book. I'd like to hear more. I'm in my very late 60s. I'm routinely perceived as being in my early 50s, and I'm concerned if I put my true age that only men much, much older than me will write to me because they set the search parameters. And a lot of men, I think, probably cut it off at age 65, if not earlier. And for the most part, I found that men, I'll come clean and tell them the truth, perhaps even in my second text message, and it's rare that any man minds. Occasionally, a man, even if I tell him before moving to the phone, if I tell him my true age, this is rare, but I get such a blistering response that I am scared off of dating sites for a month. So I got the impression I want to hear more, but yeah, go ahead.
I actually totally approve of your strategy. I think that everybody online makes themselves younger than they are, and the older you get, men do it too. So everybody expects it. If you say your true age, people will think you're even older. However, I urge people, I used to take 4 years off my age so I would be 58 rather than 62. So I would like not fit into those cutoffs. Mm-hmm. And I would put a recent picture up, and on my very first date, if I thought there was a chance of a second date, I would say, listen, I have to tell you that I'm really this age. And almost nobody had a negative response because they met me. They looked at my face. They looked at my eyes. And if they liked me, it didn't make any difference. The guys who were like blistering, they've just had so many disappointments online. They're so angry and bitter. Don't take it personally.
Let's go to Jocelyn on line 6 calling in from Manhattan. Jocelyn, thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air with Francine Russo.
Hi, Allison. Hi, Francine. This is a fantastic topic, so thank you very much. So I am a 55-year-old woman in Manhattan. I'm divorced. I was lucky enough to find a great guy, and we fell in love. And he recently left because he has a lot of work to do on his mm-hmm. life. He didn't do that work you're describing, Francine, unfortunately, and figured it out after a year and a half. But I'm back out on the dating scene, and my question is for Manhattan women. You know, guys in my demographic are very competitive in Manhattan, and a lot of women are looking for attractive men that have a lot to offer. And one of the things that struck me is I was really looking for somebody who had been married before and kind of knew how to do relationships, but I ended up with a guy who was basically a perpetual bachelor, really at heart, and unwilling to share and unwilling to open up his life truly to another person. And I'm really like, how do you overcome that? And it's really a Manhattan dating market question. It seems sort of endemic here. If you have any insight into that.
Oh, well, I am in Manhattan right now, and I did all my dating in Manhattan. The best thing about Manhattan is there are so many choices. So first of all, I urge you to be very, very active and write to as many people as possible whose profiles interest you. They don't write back, who cares? You know, and sometimes I would write a second time if somebody was really interesting. And very often I got a nice response to my second note because people are overwhelmed with responses. The other thing is most dating sites have an advanced search function. Look for it. Find people who were divorced and widowed. The other thing to do is be open to kinds of people you might not have thought about. For example, one of the women in my book is a very sophisticated New York woman, and she said it took a lot of personal growth before I could move beyond my comfort zone. But that's what she did when she met a guy who was also educated like her, and she laughingly calls him a rube from Arkansas. He was so different. He wasn't culturally sophisticated. He didn't know anything about art or music or New York or anything. And he was very religious in a way she found off-putting. And yet they clicked. And they've been together now for 15 years. And she is so grateful that she looked beyond what she thought was a kind of quote-unquote appropriate person. And I urge everybody not to be so narrow in your choices. You're not 25 with your having to come home with a Jewish doctor for your Jewish mother, or a Presbyterian, or a good
Irish
Muslim,
Catholic fella.
Muslim. Yeah, whatever it is. The world is open to you if you simply open your eyes a little bit and check off some different boxes.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk with Francine Russo about the role of adult children in dating after 50, also questions to ask about health, and maybe some guidance on how to deal with ghosting. This is all of it. This is all of it on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Francine Russo. We're talking about her book, Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. Our phone lines are full. We're going to try to get to as many calls as we can. I did want to talk about a few of the things that are very specific to being older than 50. I'm older than 50. I thought about some of these things in as I've been dating. Health is an issue. You know, you could easily be dating someone who's had stents or a pacemaker or maybe seems on track for a hip replacement. How and when should you start talking to someone about health issues, Francine?
I think as soon as you become serious, as soon as you really begin to talk about having a relationship. When I met my second husband, Chris, I was very disturbed at how obese he was. I'd already been widowed once. And when he said, I'd really like to have a relationship with you, I said, one thing concerns me. And I told him about his weight. And he said, okay, you know, I'm very active, but I'll go to Weight Watchers and I'll make a serious effort to lose weight, which he did. He never got thin. He was always somewhat overweight. And when he died, it was of lung cancer. It certainly wasn't of overweight. We also talked, we were only in our 50s. So I was thinking about caregiving because I had more money than he did, and we both bought long-term care policies because that way we knew if either of us needed long-term care, we would have it, and I wouldn't be bankrupted, and he would have the care he needed. But in terms of older people who are really thinking about whether this person will be disabled, you really need to think, am I willing? What you need to say, if you need, I cared for my mother or my late spouse, and it was a very, very difficult thing. And now I'm older and I don't have that kind of energy, and I wouldn't be able to be a full-time caregiver. If you needed care, what are your resources for getting it? Children, money, et cetera. And let's talk about how we will do this. And then one of the things you can decide is, do we want to live together, or do we want to each live in our own homes and see each other as often as we like?
Let's go to Nancy, who has a bit of a follow-up on this conversation about health. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling All of It. What's your question for Francine?
Hi, Allison. I'm a sustaining member, and I listen every day.
Lovely.
My question is, I'm divorced. I'm 74 years old. I don't have a lot of money. I should be in assisted living, but I can't afford it. Mm. Okay, so that I have COPD, I have type 1 diabetes, and I have rheumatica. Now, what man is going to date me?
You sound like you have a lot of energy and a lot of spice, shall we say, Nancy. But it's a realistic question, and it's a serious question, Francine, and I'm not making light of it at all. I think she sounds like she could be a great person to have a conversation with. What do you do when you are in those situations?
Okay. You sound very feisty, and I suggest that you don't bring up all your health issues right away. I mean, especially if you're dating online or you're meeting people, that you get across to people what your personality is, what you have to offer, how much fun you are, that you connect on an experiential level. Maybe you've had some of the same experiences. And then you talk about some of your health issues and how you know they're an issue. And maybe you don't look for somebody to live with, or maybe the other person has a whole bunch of health issues too and says, you know what, I'm wondering who will deal with me with all my health issues. If you'll deal with mine, I'll deal with yours. And yes, we can live together.
Let's go to James, who is calling in with a great question. James is calling in from the Bronx. Hi, James. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. My name is James. I am in a parking lot, so I apologize if there's noise that
it
comes through. I'm 26. I'm actually calling about the role of adult children. My parents divorced close to a decade ago now. And my mother's had on and off success in her dating life. And my father's found another wonderful partner. But I'm curious what you believe the role of adult children in helping to support their parents in this quest journey.
Well, first of all,
what to call it?
Right. Well, first of all, I commend you in wanting to support your mother in this quest, because the real problem for many new couples is their adult children do not want them to have a relationship or resent having exclusive time with their parent taken away. And yet I have heard of a number of couples who have been fixed up by their adult children. So, and if your mother is dating and she's using online dating and you can be a help and encouragement, I say go for it, because she's got you in her corner, and already that gives her a big leg up.
I want to ask about your adult children. You write in the book, oh boy, they can be a problem. What are some tips for handling problematic adult children?
Okay, the first thing is, if you're in a serious relationship, keep your expectations very low. If you can achieve a cordial relationship with your partner's children, that is sometimes the best that can be hoped for, whatever age they are. The other thing I would say is, if your own kids have a problem, be sensitive to their feelings. Really hear them out, because so many people think, oh my gosh, you're 47. Get over it. You're an adult. But in fact, if you're a parent, you're a parent forever. And you've had this relationship with your children their whole lives and much of yours. That's a precious relationship. So hear them out. What are they afraid of? What do they have feelings of loss about this, about change? Hear them out and then tell them what you need as a separate adult, about your loneliness and what you need from a partner that you can't get from your children, and also the ways that having a partner can benefit them, because it really can. You know, if they don't have to run to the emergency room every time you have an issue, that's a big thing off of their chest.
My guest is Francine Russo. We're talking about her book, Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. Let's slide in one more call. We're going to go with Janelle, I believe it is. Janelle.
Hi.
Thanks for calling
Hi, it's Jarelle. Hi, it's Jarelle. I met my guy at 15 years ago. We're both 77, so we met at 62 on Match.com. On the phone, our first conversation, one of the things he said is that he had had a heart attack, and I was absolutely shocked that not only, it was a drag as a turnoff. However, the fact that he was honest really turned me on, and he was just, anyway, so I am the first woman he has ever lived with. I've had a long marriage. I had always had, you know, glamorous men. He is he's a blue collar. He came from his father's a house painter. He's dyslexic. I'm a writer. I worked for 30 years at the New York Times, but as art director, we share art. But we lived together for a few years, and then it just got impossible, and in Manhattan, and then we broke up, and during that time, he found another place, he bought a church, and he's a painter. And I had another guy who was a glamorous rock musician and Ooh. Chemical engineer. Anyway, so, but this guy fell apart when I had a family problem. I fell apart, and he couldn't take it. So I called Arthur, and Arthur was, even had a girlfriend, but he had never stopped loving me. And so we got back together. We have a great relationship. We couldn't be more different, you know.
Jarelle, I'm going to dive in here. The thing I love about her story, Francine, is like everything you've talked about in one story is Jarelle's
exactly.
story.
Exactly.
It's so fantastic. I want to end on one. We probably should end on Jarelle, but this is something I think that people my generation who have tried online dating, it's the thing, it is the scourge, ghosting. Ghosting, ghosting, ghosting. Please tell us how to deal with ghosting before we let you go.
Ghosting is very, very common. Basically, somebody is really into you either online or has a few dates with you and just disappears. It's disappointing, it's hurtful, but it is very, very common. So tell yourself it's not personal. This person is obviously has terrible manners, is inconsiderate, and would have been a terrible partner, but it's not really about you. And there are also wonderful, considerate, lovely people online. And try again.
The name of the book is Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. It really is a very useful and well-written guide. Francine, thank you so much for taking our listeners' calls, and we really appreciate having you on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Allison.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.